welcome in the latest Roush Hour with the man of the hour, Nick Roush. It's his birthday. Don't be too mean to him in the comments. How's it going, buddy?
It's going. I got to celebrate my birthday at the dentist and with you, SEC Mike. So I can't think of two better ways than by getting my teeth scraped at and by hearing from a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, so hey, the top two things that are happening to you today, I'm one of them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. How's it going, man? I mean, this is just a damn wild weekend in the SEC, and who the hell's the best team? Who's going to win it? I have no idea. Can you fill us in with your thoughts there, Nick?
Well, I know who's the worst, and I know who's losing their job. Sam Pittman didn't have to make us wait very long, but Hugh Freeze, he's not going to make us wait much longer. I kind of like to start with the bad because I'm very familiar with the bad. And 151 yards? 151 yards of offense? How do you do that with that roster? It is unfathomable. And the part that I can't seem to wrap my head around, I mean, Jackson Arnold was sacked, what, like six times?
Mm-hmm.
I was told going into the season that this was the best Auburn offensive line in years. So – what that tells me, Michael, is that the coach can't get his quarterback to throw the football. And I'm shocked that we haven't even turned the month to October. And the biggest question that we had this offseason has already been answered. And that is, can Hugh Freeze still be an offensive ball coach? Like, can he still scheme up a modern offense? And the answer is no. I mean, it's unequivocally no. Like, it's one thing if you just blame Peyton Thorne, but, like, Jackson Arnold, he's doing it too, right? Like, there's a common denominator here, and I don't think it's just that all of his quarterbacks are bad, even though I'm still waiting for Hugh Freeze to blame Jackson Arnold for their offense being terrible.
I'm so glad you said that, Nick, because I do want to give the man credit.
Mm-hmm.
He has not thrown anyone under the bus, to my knowledge. Not yet. Four games in. A lot to go. Big Georgia game looming. That's a perfect opportunity to throw, particularly the left tackle, under the bus here. So, hey, maybe he's getting better. But, yeah, I mean, I saw this a million miles away, and it's certainly coming to fruition here where what do we do here, Nick? I mean, do you think he's back? Like, well, he said 6-6, the goal. I mean, I think they can get there.
I'm just wondering, did he get to the golf course this week? That's what I needed. I needed a picture of you on the links to really just stir it up. Because the other problem, too, is, like, why didn't he just turn around and hand the ball off? Right? Like, you're one of the best running teams in the country, and I know they've got some great receivers, but, like, you would think that just would have been an easy thing to do. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that whatsoever. At least for Auburn to show, like, that they had a pulse offensively. I mean, that those receivers, they're just too talented. They're too good. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But on the other side of the coin, as Mike Elko would say, why aren't you asking how we got to 4-0? And it's one of those. I bring it up a lot. Like, sometimes it's all about just getting the win and finding a way to win ugly. Because they should have punched it in right there. You get the turnover, the pick six, like 80-yard pick six. But A&M should have pulled away. And I know Marcel Reed probably wasn't perfect in that football game. But they got to 4-0, and you talk about teams at the top of the league that can get it done. I mean, how different is Texas A&M than a Bama, than a Georgia, than an Ole Miss, right? Like, that sort of cluster in the middle, they're right there in the mix of it. And so I don't think they're going to be able to play an offense that bad every week to help that defense out. But you got to have A&M as one of the contenders near the top of the league.
Hey, I'm so glad you said that, Nick, because last night on our night show, Steven Lassen and I, we were picking teams to make the SEC championship and teams to win it. I predicted A&M beating Alabama in the SEC championship. Now, I don't have a ton of confidence in that. It's not like I'm saying A&M's a million miles better than anybody, but I think they are balanced. And now they got the running game going. They've got these elite receivers. Marcel Reed, there's still a lot of way to growth in his game. But now the defense is coming around. Is that a wild take, you think, that A&M could win the Southeastern Conference?
No, not at all. And, you know, they do have some difficult games away from home that could easily be stumbling blocks. But balance, that's the part where you look at all of these teams near the top, and they all lack so they lack that, right? Like, you could say the Ole Miss offense has it, but defensively they haven't really been tested because LSU's offense stinks. I can't figure that out. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But Georgia's a team where their defense is starting to figure it out. They've got a lot of younger guys. And the one that we're not talking about because they played a bunch of duds in a row, man, Texas might just be just laying low, waiting. That defense is awesome. You get Arch Manning going, get those engines revved up, especially if he's able to do it on the road against a challenging Florida defense. Texas is a team right now that if we could buy stock in team, I would buy stock in Texas right now, because there's not a lot out there that convinces you that they're great, but there's a lot of good. And if Arch figures it out and becomes 60-70% of what we thought he could be, then that looks like the best team in the SEC to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about them Vols, Nick? Come on, Joey Swagular. Just won a big conference game on the road. That's always a hurdle for Josh Heupel and company, winning on the road in this conference. He just got it done.
Yeah, and it was one of those where I didn't think that, like, I thought Tennessee would ultimately just outwill them. That game was a real Spider-Man meme, right? Because Jeff Levy is doing the Josh Heupel thing just without as much talent, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It's very similar, and it made for an exciting game, but ultimately Tennessee just had the willpower and the big plays, right? Like, you get the big defensive plays that there at the end that sort of turn the game on its head. I really wanted, like, that would have been a very fun story for this guy personally, where you have Mississippi State seemingly come out of nowhere for a team that's going nowhere, just to have the belief that can happen. That's huge for all the bad teams to know that. Like, I mean, we talked about the schedule release last week, and everybody wanted Vandy and Mississippi State. And look at those programs now. Like, look where they've come. And I know Mississippi State's got a lot of daunting tasks ahead. But to show that sort of fight, and also that it wasn't just a fluke, you know, like, that even when they aren't firing on all cylinders, they can overcome some adversity, hang in the game. They weren't able to get it done. But if they were, Mike, this was going to be so much more fun. It was, because as good as Tennessee had been, they would have been staring at two losses already before October. So that was a big win, to be able to grind it out, to win ugly. And that's what you got to do sometimes in this league, Mike. You got to win ugly. And unfortunately, Tennessee got it done amidst the cowbells, tough environment. So, yeah, that was a big rite of passage for old Swagular.
It was. Hey, I'm surprised no one's figured this out yet, Nick. But now, I just did it yesterday, so maybe in fairness, but on the top of the screen, we have all the Southeastern Conference teams, and they are ranked currently in order of the conference standings. So you said you wanted to start with the bad. I didn't even want to get into this because I'm sure you're tired of it, but you kind of just led into something here. The worst of the worst, all the way on the right, is, of course, Kentucky.
Yep.
We don't have to rehab. I mean, it was just... Well, I do want to ask one thing. How the hell did the left tackle not come up with that ball? Because if he did, I mean, Kentucky probably still would have lost. But I feel like the entire game could have changed if the ball that was right in front of him that he jumped on, that he did not come up with. Had he come up with that, I think it's a different ball game.
Because things just snowballed so quickly from that. You give the defense a touchdown. Two plays later, tip pass goes directly to the South Carolina safety. And I know one of these turnovers was the last play of the half, but four turnovers in a quarter, like, you're not good enough to overcome that. That was a matchup between the two worst teams in the SEC. And I think maybe, you know, obviously Arkansas fans are probably like, oh, don't forget about us. But you have some similarities between Arkansas and South Carolina, where neither team's very good, but their quarterback is a superhero that can do it all. And Lenora Sellers certainly did. But those were two bad teams that should have been a game in the fourth quarter, right? Like, that's a game you're in the fourth quarter, it's close, and then Sellers goes out and be Superman. But, man, Kentucky's bad, and it's the opposite of what you see with Mississippi State and Vandy. It's how quickly things can go wrong. And Kentucky went from top five team in the league year in and year out in the SEC East, playing competent football, right? Like, you're hard out no matter who you're playing, to the worst team in the SEC, and it's not really close. I mean,
right? Well, again, I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound, and I'm sure you're tired of saying the same thing over and over. But here's where I'm going with this, because I didn't realize it, and I wish I had the gentleman's name, but I retweeted an article he did on Mark Stoops today, and I knew the buyout was ridiculous. It's apparently it's $38 million, and I didn't realize they'd owe it to him within 60 days. Apparently,
oh yeah.
So that's not happening. But the point being, you just listen to what we were saying about Mississippi State. Now, they did bring in like 60, 70 new guys.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be the path for Kentucky, right? If they keep Stoops, is to kind of blow it up, bring in 70 new guys. And will it work? I don't know. But there's evidence to suggest that can be done.
You know the definition of insanity, Michael?
Doing the same thing over and over.
And expecting different results. So that was the plan this offseason. It was like, well, the transfer portal offensive linemen weren't good, so we need to go back to the transfer portal and get offensive linemen. It's like, wait, huh? It's marginally better, but that would be the course of action, right? As you blow it up, you bring in 50 more players, you fire all of your assistants. I think maybe Brad White would probably be the only one left. But that's the part where Bush Hamden's been bad as Kentucky's play caller. They haven't scored three touchdowns against an SEC team since he got here. That's inexcusably bad.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you have a good offensive coordinator hire, like, how good can it be? That's Mark Stoops' offense ever since he's been there. It's been bad, and that's wearing on people, right? Like, playing games where you have to hold the other team to less than 20 points to expect a win. Like, that's just a bad winning recipe. There's a lot of fatigue that's growing on a lot of people. And now, I mean, you just played one of the worst teams in the SEC. It was a coin flip game and you got blown out. So they go to Georgia, they get a bye, but then it's Texas, Tennessee, they go to Auburn. They're going to be able to score points on that defense. Like, you know, so they're staring down the barrel. Things aren't looking good at all. Kirby Smart said yesterday that I hope fans appreciate what Stoops has done. And I think Kentucky fans appreciate what he's done. They're just afraid of what he's going to do next. 8-22 in conference games since he became the Wildcats' all-time winningest coach. 8-22 against power conference teams, I should say, because there's some losses to some ACC and Big Ten teams in there. So it's a lot of losing over the last 4 years to games that you feel like you should be on the same level as.
Well, Nick, if I may quote the Dark Knight, it's always darkest before the dawn. So you got that hanging out there. Hey, shout out. He gave us a donation, so I want to highlight this comment. Popeye's Knuckles, what a name. Could Michael Hawkins, the backup quarterback here at Oklahoma, and Mateer end up being the same kind of deal as Austin Simmons and Chambliss? Quarterback controversy?
Ooh, I like that question because, I mean, Hawkins wasn't bad last year, and he was in that terrible offense with Seth Luttrell. So, like, Hawkins should be able to buoy them. Obviously, he'll be able to do that against Kent State, and that's a great way to ramp up before Red River, because I know Dr. Shin is a superhero surgeon that's going to make everything better. But, like, in all likelihood, Mateer's not going to play in Red River. Hawkins, like, if that's a – the way that game looks on paper, it looks like it's just going to be a low-scoring slobber knocker. So if Hawkins could just make a couple big plays with his legs and just keep them from being consistently behind the chains, like if you don't want to be stuck in a lot of third and longs with Hawkins, but that feels like it should be a low-scoring affair. If you don't make the catastrophic turnovers, like you can give yourself a chance with Hawkins. I mean, let's be real, Mike. In the portal era, nobody has good quarterback depth. Like, it just doesn't really exist. Lane is obviously an exception because he went and got a great player from the D2 ranks. But, like, these guys go. So the fact that you have Hawkins at least to buy you some time, like, that is a much more competent backup than I think you would see at most places. Right. So, like, I think he'll ultimately be able to give them a chance with a game under his belt to build some confidence against Kent State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let me ask it this way, Nick. Here's the schedule. I'm overlooking Kent State. They're like a 50-point favorite. They'll destroy them.
Yeah.
No idea timeline. I know we're all fingers crossed John Mateer's back for Texas, but let's be conservative. This guy just had hand surgery.
Right, on his throwing hand.
Let's say he misses the month of October, which I don't think is like that unrealistic. Can they go, if the offense gets you 21 points per game with that defense, what do you think their record is the month of October without John Mateer if they can score 21 with that defense?
500. And that includes Kent State, right? Like they will not be able to keep up with Ole Miss. You have to be able to keep up with them to a certain degree. I know that game is at home, so it's a little bit different than what we saw Ole Miss against LSU, but like there, Ole Miss is going to score points. So like that's the one. If I'm an Oklahoma fan, I'm holding my breath and hoping that thumb can grip a football by October 25th, because that feels like a -1.5 to +1.5. Like that feels like a very close spread if you have Mateer, but without him, like I don't see a way you win that game. That's the one that I think would concern me the most. It's a rivalry game, and Hawkins can maybe do something in Texas. Like, it feels like it'd be close, but I wouldn't feel great if you don't have the guy who was the Heisman front runner before he got injured.
Right. So, again, and I probably should have went with the teams for people just listening back later, but it's obviously Kent State at home, Texas in Dallas, at South Carolina, Ole Miss at home. So, yeah, I'm kind of right there with you, 500-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hopefully he's back before South Carolina. You know, I hope he is. But point being, even if they do lose two games, which no Oklahoma fans are going to accept after that 4-0 start and about to be 5-0, you're still in it.
Yeah.
At Tennessee, at Alabama, Missouri, LSU. I mean, not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. But right. if you beat those four, there's no shot in hell they leave them out of the playoff. And hell, I think even if you go 3-1, with those last four, I think they'd say, well, hell, they lost two games without John Mateer. We've got to put this team in.
No, without a doubt. In a 9-3 SEC team with that schedule, I know we had all of the strength of schedule drama with the playoff committee and all that stuff a year ago. But I do think a 9-3 SEC team is going to get in there. And if it is, let's say it's Oklahoma or LSU, right? Like, let's say they're the two 9-3 teams.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to give Oklahoma probably more benefit of the doubt. I know they've got a head-to-head to prove it there at the end of the year, but I think the committee would give them more benefit of the doubt, especially if LSU's offense doesn't figure it out. And, Mike, we got to talk about that. Like, what? what the hell's going on, man? Like, that... How is it that bad? I just can't. It doesn't compute. I mean,
well, I've never been a fan of Joe Sloan. That was for all the money and resources they have at LSU to have that guy as your offensive coordinator was clear. I mean, in hindsight, it's 2020, but that's going to be potentially the thing that really kills LSU this year.
But structurally, Brian Kelly should have them in some sort of successful framework where maybe the play calling isn't perfect, but like, how can they just not run the football at all?
They can't run on anybody.
don't ask Brian Kelly. He'll get triggered. But like, I mean, they can't run it at all. And you're asking Nussmeier to be a superhero, and we assumed the switch would flip, right? That there would be this big jump from year one to year two as a starter, but
right. And I don't know if you remember this, Nick, but in fall camp, this clip's gone viral this week. Mm-hmm. But Brian Kelly's buddy, I've seen some offensive lines. This is an elite offensive. NFL people are telling me this is an elite offensive. Yeah, they're garbage. They lost that game because they had 5-6 blocking Ole Miss 3, and they could not get the job done.
And Ole Miss doesn't have the craziest front line. I mean, they're good, but they're not one of the elite front lines in the SEC. They're not at Texas or like it's what you're going to see every week. And you let the floodgates open that easily? I know that that's, you know, they're playing for a trophy. It's on the road, but it feels like they're pulling teeth to try to move the ball. And I just can't, I'm shocked by it all. I can't understand it. And I mean, Amir was right. Like Nussmeier, I wouldn't say it's completely tanked it and there's time to recover some of it, but he's not been the player that I thought he was. And eventually sometimes, you know, when a player's trying to tell you what they are, you got to listen. And he's kind of a lot of the same of what he was last year. Just pretty good, not great. And I'm afraid that old Heisman ticket I've got in my pocket is going to be that's the worst part, right? When you place these future bets on my bookie and you're looking down and you're like, why do I got to keep looking at this stupid ticket? Like for me, you know, we talk about those teams that were clustered near the top. There were three teams that I thought were clustered there: South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Florida. I thought they were all pretty similar. I thought they would all take a step back after losing a lot of talent last year. I wasn't willing to make bets on unders for South Carolina and Florida because I'm like, they got awesome quarterbacks. Well, turns out just the head coach matters, right? Lane Kiffin's a freaking ball coach. You can't say that about Shane Beamer or Billy Napier. So I was wrong. I'm going to have that Ole Miss under ticket staring at me while they're getting 9 or 10 wins. Lane Kiffin, man, that guy, like, that was a perfect play call for that situation on fourth and short.
And
the thing that I like too, Mike, and we'll talk about it with the Georgia-Bama game, but there's still a lot of college football fans who get weirded out by their coaches going for it on fourth down. If you watch the NFL, it's almost the opposite. If you're punting on fourth and medium, it's like, okay, what are we doing here? We got to be going for this. Whereas like in college, there's still some fans that are getting used to it. Wayne don't give a damn. Like that, go win the game. Like you have a better shot. Like the odds of you converting a fourth and three or two, I think it was three, versus giving the ball back to them and then getting a stop. I know LSU's offense is what it is, but like you take that chance and they took it. They hit that big SOB out there in the flat. And that's got to go down as all-time slide. Like that clip of – it was Daquan Wright, right?
He
looked like the gif of Coach K where he, like, slowly falls down to the hardwood court. Like, it's so funny. Like,
and that was right after Chambliss ran out of bounds inexplicably.
Yeah.
Yet Kiffin had the trust and confidence in that guy. I know it was just a simple mistake, but it was a big mistake at the time. You know, he put the trust in Chambliss to go out there and execute the play. So, to your point, I mean, he's a hell of a coach. He knows what he's doing. A lot of coaches would not have done that. And not only, you know, did they scheme it up. I mean, he was wide ass open there.
So here's my question for you. Like, and we're talking all of college football. Not turn around a program in a year. I would say you got one game and you need to pick a guy to go win it for you. How many people are you taking over Lane Kiffin?
I had him number two in my coach rankings this offseason. So Kirby's the only one, I think.
I mean, I trust Lane more than Sark, right? Like that's the part that's hard in all of this is for one game, like that guy can call it up. He can in like college basketball, it kind of reminds me of Rick Pitino, where it's like he may not always have the most talent. In fact, he might be worse with more talent, but he can coach those guys up. He can call the right plays. He can get you in a situation to win. It's just he doesn't have that playoff appearance, right? Like he's got the New Year's Six wins, but he doesn't have that big one. Ole Miss, man, he's got it as tuned up as you can get it tuned up. But can he win a title there? That ultimately is probably why, you know, when we get into that coaching carousel later on, his name's going to keep coming up because if I'm picking schools in the SEC that can win a national title in the next 15 years, I don't know if Ole Miss is on it. I don't know if they're on it.
Yeah, well, I got a thought. I'll hit you with it here in just a second. What a shout out, Jimmy Meredith. He became a member to the channel.
Welcome to the family.
Thank you, Jimmy. We appreciate you as well as Sean, SEC Sean. He's coming for my job. So shout out, Sean. Good luck. Let me know if you need any help.
Welcome to the family.
And then Steven Up. We appreciate you, buddy. He's always here. Nick, he's always gifting memberships. So many, he's got his own jingle.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. Yeah. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven. He gifted Denny. Denny, welcome to the family. And JR said he's trying to gift, but it won't let him. So we appreciate the support anyway, JR. No need to gift. You've gifted so many here. But,
man, you got them boys in Bama. They bring a shovel to, I mean, Kalen DeBoer's a zombie. We already buried his ass and still beat. I just.
Wait, hold on. Hold that thought. Because I swear I'm going right there. But I piss off the Ole Miss fans pretty good on Saturday night. I may have been a little liquored up. But I said, hey, Lane Kiffin, he's not leaving for Florida. I saw what you were just trying to do there. I think he's the perfect coach for Ole Miss because just how weird it is there. Now, they demand excellence. I think Lane does as well. But he's a 10-2, 9-3 coach. He is elite. We just kissed his ass. But I also call him Lane Whiffin for a reason, Nick. He whiffs a game or two a year. I don't think he'll ever win anything of significance. I don't think Ole Miss will ever win anything of significance. So they're like the perfect pairing. Do you see the logic there?
they're a match made in heaven because they refuse to get out of their own way.
And they're not going to run his ass off for going 9-3, 10-2 every year, are they?
No.
Never.
They'd
run his ass at Florida if he did that.
There will come a point fatigue if they don't. Like it'll be kind of James Franklin-esque where it's like you got to eventually break through. What's Ole Miss's whiff going to be? Let's look at the schedule. What's the big whiff going to be?
Yeah, they'll have a couple, right? It'll be South Carolina perhaps, Florida with their interim. Maybe their interim coach is a badass. I doubt it. The most comical would be they've got the playoffs on lock.
And then they go to Mississippi State and lose. That honestly is like, yeah, they're losing the Egg Bowl. That's going to happen.
I mean, we got to remember, Dick, this is a guy who said, we don't want to go to the SEC championship. And they just whooped Georgia's ass, I believe. And they had everything out in front of them. And then they lost to Billy Napier. You know what I mean? So, again, I think he's perfect for Ole Miss. To steer it to Kalen DeBoer, you asked, you know, one game to win, one coach to win a game. How high is Kalen DeBoer? I call him big game DeBoering because he threw his big DeBoering dick out on Georgia once again. Now he'll fall asleep. He's the same deal, Nick. He'll lose to South Carolina.
Yeah.
He'll lose to Missouri or some stupid, but he'll whip your ass if it's a big game. Kalen DeBoer is rising up that list of he's whipped Sark, he's beat Dan Lanning. I mean, this guy's a big game DeBoering here.
His and I don't know the stat too. His like top 10 wins or something, but it's
like he's 7-1.
It's impressive, man, and that's why like I was happy to bury Bama fans because guys, you all you go and lose to Florida State and you're ready to fire your coach, and then you just go to Georgia and snap their 26 game winning streak at night. Which, by the way, do you know who their last loss was to at night?
I know Will Muschamp and Carolina beat them.
Yep.
But at night, no, I don't know.
It's 2009. Morgan Newton was the quarterback. Randall Cobb was at Kentucky. And Georgia had four turnovers, and the Cats beat them between the hedges. There were so many turnovers. Kentucky had a kick return touchdown in that game. So it had been a long time since Georgia had lost at night. And, man, I think can explain not just this game but Alabama seemingly figuring it out is that it was just going to take some time for Ty Simpson to get comfortable as a starter with Ryan Grubb as his play caller, where so much is changing all the time in this sport. Having some comfortability with your play caller and your offense coordinator, like that matters. And Simpson, like, I'll give him credit, man. I did not know he had that in him to play as efficiently as he did. Like, that was impressive. That was impressive. And for them to be able to hold on while Georgia's cranking the heat up, I expected Georgia to come back and win that game, right? Like, it felt like the perfect way to exercise demons from that loss a year ago because it played out so similarly. You came back, you took the lead, but then Ryan Williams happened. I thought it was going to happen for them this year, but this time Georgia's young defense was going to step up. They were going to get that stop. But that fourth down call, man, they tried to go fast. I think it was the right decision. I think Kirby showed some – like, Kirby's old school, right? Like, he doesn't want to do that. That showed some willingness to adapt. And I think, as he would tell you, you take the process over the results. The process was right. And they're going to get in a similar situation like this later in the year where that process is going to pay off and they're going to win a big game because he's ballsy enough to go for it on fourth down. So I know Georgia fans are pissed off. That team from Tuscaloosa, they just can't seem to get over that hump. But it's almost kind of like that Tennessee game where you don't necessarily feel terrible about either team coming out of it. Even the losing team.
Let me ask you this, Nick. Are you aware, Simpson, he had 38 attempts. Have you seen the statistic, how many times he was pressured among the 38?
Oh, like four?
I think it was five.
Yeah.
And he was one of five. So, I mean, if they get to him, you can rattle him. But
yeah.
The point being is Georgia can't get to the quarterback this year. They're 117th in the country in sacks. Average sacks, not total, because I know they were on a bye, but 1.25 they're averaging a game. I can't recall a Kirby Smart defense being anything like this. And then my favorite stat exiting the weekend, I've said it every show, they're probably tired of hearing it. Do you have any idea, Nick, Georgia's record the last seven games against Power 4 and Notre Dame, the record the last seven games for Georgia in those power matchups?
3-4?
Well, you were pretty damn close. 4-3.
Okay.
But still, this is mighty Georgia right. We're talking about here where, hey, they've kind of, I mean, it goes without saying. Now, they've played some really good teams there.
Yeah.
But they've come down to the pack a little bit.
Yeah. You lose conference championship game. You lose in the playoff. And it is because of they're playing the trenches, right, on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Offensive line, defensive line. I know they're shuffling some guys around. I think they've started a different offensive line combination in every single game. And that's like what Mark Stoops said at his press conference this week. They're, you know, they're your typical Georgia team. I'm like, no, they're not. And eventually that attrition, I mean, they've had 30 defensive players drafted from the 30 different defensive players drafted over the last 5 years. Like that's going to catch up to you. I mean, a lot of those guys are starting in the NFL. You can't just keep turning them out. And they've got talent there, but it's a lot of younger talent, right? It's like playing sophomores, you know, and freshmen. CJ Allen's awesome in the middle, but that's what's so weird about them is they're a team that is relying on Mike Bobo to dial it up for Gunnar Stockton to get it to those talented receivers. And I will commend them for their creativity with Zachariah Branch. They do a lot of stuff to get him involved, but like that – I think the reason why I said, Mike, that it's like, okay, they seemingly turned a corner in some respects. In part, it's because they just shut them out in the second half. But Alabama couldn't run the ball. They only had 117 rush yards. Right. And, okay, all right, you can stop the run now. That's a good start. Now get after the quarterback. That's their biggest issue. But here's the thing. I think Kentucky is the antidote to a lot of teams' problems, so they get to sip on some of that antidote on Saturday between the hedges.
Yeah, I mean, all the picking we can do at Georgia, you know, 0 out of 100, 0 being low, 100 being obviously a lock. I mean, them to make the playoff, I think it's still probably like 85, 90%.
Yeah, because
they got Ole Miss at home, they got Texas at home. Those will be tough, but there's no shot they're losing all these games at home, I don't think.
We're going to look up at the end of the month, and they're going to be like second in the league in sacks after playing Kentucky and Auburn. You know, it's just, I mean, because they got that going for them. That Ole Miss game is obviously going to be a huge one, but I'm going to trust Kirby more than Lane. So you made me give a number. I still say it's an 85% chance they make the playoff. I will say, though, that margin of error in the Ole Miss and Texas games, like, you can't lose both of those.
Right.
You got to win one of them. But I they're at home. They're going to win at least one of them and be 10-2, go to the playoff. Hell, they still might make the SEC championship at 10-2, you know?
Right. And for all of Kirby manufactured criticisms, he's got some real criticisms he can actually, I mean, God forbid what he's going to do with that. You know, he won't have to manufacture any of it.
Right. Like, here's some real weaknesses we have on our team that we have to fix. And I do love, you know, like, just the no-nonsense. Guy fumbles. All right, sitting your ass to the bench. I got another guy who'll go out and get 100 yards for me. Like, that's just – it's Kirby Smart football, you know. Bowens might not be the guy this week. It might be Frazier.
Right.
And just go back and forth. Like, that part of them, they still will figure out. Even if the running game isn't their strength, they're going to find a way to have a 100-yard rusher.
Well, speaking of dogs, the best damn dog out there is JR. Again, he's back. He gets every episode.
The legend, cousin JR, has done it again.
This time he's gifted to Tony Canada. Tony, welcome to the family, courtesy of JR. Hey,
well, Mike, I got a random question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to get to be the next Feinbaum? I hear he's going to be a senator, so somebody's got to take over his show.
It's coming. Yeah, I think it's coming down to the wire there.
Feinbaum versus Bruce Pearl for Senate.
Hey, true story. I texted Paul recently, and I asked him if he's looking for a running mate, and I told him Cousin Shane is very interested.
You know what? Doesn't that sound like a movie? Like, that's a movie, right? Like DeVito and Schwarzenegger, you know?
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what's going to come of that, but TBD.
That'd be so weird, just especially on Fridays. Like, you know, I can't, I'm not going to be locked in every day of the week listening to the Feinbaum callers, but on Friday when he's there and you're talking with all the people and, you know, I got to hear Mike Griffith come on and espouse some nonsense and just get me all fired up. And then, you know, you get the president of the university and Paul starts talking about some weird random stuff. Like, the Feinbaum Fridays get me fired up. So, you know, I don't want to see that go away right away.
No, I'm 100% with you. That's Fridays. I say I take the day off. I do like 4 interviews and that is my day to kind of chill. Right. And I soak up every moment of those Feinbaum Fridays. So it would be a shame, but I don't know. That's TBD to my knowledge. Man.
Who would have thought an Alabama Senate seat left by Tommy Tuberville would cause so much change in the SEC? Auburn losing Bruce Pearl, maybe Feinbaum stepping away from ESPN like that. Whew. Tuberville, of all people, the guy who got fired at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Left in the middle of a Texas Tech
recruiting dinner. Yeah. That guy.
That's
more powerful than Greg Sankey in the SEC.
Apparently. You know who else is powerful, Nick?
Who?
Poncho Outdoors. Go check them out. Poncho Outdoors/SEC. That's the important part. You got to write it down just like it's there. Poncho Outdoors/SEC to get you $10 off at Poncho Outdoors. This is a Austin-based business, Nick. That's why we love it. We love all these SEC-based companies, and they got you covered with some fine gear. They sent some to me. They sent some to Shane.
Nice.
We got to get you some here. We're talking Western polos, tough threads, comfortable, durable, versatile, kind of like them dogs. So go check them out. Poncho Outdoors. And the best part, Nick, if you go to ponchooutdoors.com/SEC, get that $10.
Boom.
Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges. Make sure everything fits. And yeah, I mean, that's, you can't beat it. You know what?
I wasn't sure what was going on there. I do love the Western wear, though. The Western wear.
It's coming back, you know?
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I'm fired up, too, because I'm going to be down in Austin in a little bit.
Hell, you can go to the poncho facility yourself and tell them I sent you. You know what?
Heck yeah. Oh, man. That was a shot too low. A poncho paper bag for my head.
Shane could be the Chris Farley to find. Yeah. What was that? Black Sheep?
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Have you seen Shane with the wig? He's got the wig he's wearing. He's got a Kirby Smart wig.
Oh, beautiful. I love Kirby's hair. He's built a lab to be the Georgia head football coach.
I feel like the hair would help on the campaign trail.
Yeah. Ooh, Feinbaum with the hair. Imagine if Feinbaum just showed up with a full head of hair.
Hey, well, how about this weekend, Nick? Favorite games? I know you're fired up for Kentucky, Georgia, but is that the top one on your list?
My eyes are going to be on Arch because I know that the Florida defense is stout. And if it wasn't a last hurrah against LSU, then this might be it. Cause realistically, if you're a Gator fan, as much as you're ready to fire Billy, like if you beat Arch in Texas at home, you're going to be happy Saturday. Yeah. Right.
Save his job.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not quite there, but it's a home game, like against a team who can really get it going. And that defense is legit. So, like, I'm fascinated to see if Arch can turn it on and actually play well against a quality opponent. That's the matchup I got my most eyes on. And then also, like Mississippi State, we've seen them play well at home. Can they keep it up again week after week? Like this is the part where you start to see these teams kind of fade in the middle of the grind, and you got to go to a place like Kyle Field in that hostile environment, and one of your former players might just whoop your ass all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
14.5 is a steep price to pay, but I got a feeling that the wheels might be spinning. Mississippi State tries to get in a shootout and just can't keep up at A&M.
Hey, we had a great question from Cousin Jake. Any of these teams on upset alert, you feel like? Not that you're outright predicting, but upset alert, I guess.
It'd be Texas, honestly. I mean, because what if Arch reverts back to bad, bad, bad Arch? This game could be in a real teeth, like you see those games, right, where it's just ugly and you look up in the third quarter and you're like, how is this only a 10-7 game? What the hell is going on here? And then Arch throws a bad pick six and all of a sudden you look up and Texas is in trouble. So if I'm putting anybody on upset alert, it's Texas this week. As weird as Lagway's been, like you're always just one big play away from turning that game upside down. They're coming off a bye. I don't trust Billy Napier to throw them across the room, but still, like, they can make it happen. They can certainly make it happen and get the train back on the tracks. And then Scott Strickland doesn't even have to fire him. Be great. Just keep Billy around. Keep him around forever.
Yeah, like maybe the swamp will rattle Arch. I mean, I don't know if that had anything to do with his struggles in Columbus, but, you know, we've not seen enough of him to know if maybe he can't handle the road crowd. You know, that could be something there.
Yeah. And it was I know he's got one of those games under his belt at the Horseshoe, but still, like, we're going to be doubting Arch until he proves us otherwise. And this is a real challenge. This is a real challenge. So it's kind of like, I feel like it could go either way. Like, he's either going to turn around and show up and be the guy that proves all the naysayers wrong. And it won't prove all the naysayers wrong. There's going to be people out there that say Florida stinks. Of course, Texas beat him. But this defense is legit. An outstanding performance down there. It would confirm that Texas is legit and the team to beat in the SEC. But they also could just steer off the tracks, lose, and all of a sudden you look up and you say, oh, God, now what do we do? Do we change quarterbacks? Because,
Any you giving any hope to Vanderbilt on the road at Alabama?
Yes. I mean,
they can't be stopped.
Like, betting against Diego Pavia just feels like something stupid to do. But, like, part of the reason they won that game last year is they got an early lead, they were at home, and they were able to play Vanderbilt football the whole time. Getting an early lead against this Bama team, I mean, we saw what happened against Georgia. Like, it ain't easy, right? So this feels like a game where Vanderbilt has to win the toss and then go on a 7-minute touchdown scoring drive to have a chance. I feel like you're going to know in the first quarter if Vandy can win this or not, because they have to be methodical. They have to play ball control offense from ahead. I know that, like, and they have to win the turnover battle. Like, if Simpson gets a little too loose with the football, Bama's in trouble. But I feel like the way that Bama loses is by sleepwalking. They aren't going to sleepwalk through this game. They lost it a year ago, and now they're at home, and everybody loves Diego Pavia. I mean, like, Shane Beamer pisses me off. How pissed off do you think they are at Pavia? Every time he opens his mouth, they got to be gritting their teeth on that Bama defense. Like, really? We let this guy beat us, and now he gets to go and talk shit to everybody in the SEC? Like, we created this monster. We got to go kill it. So let's get our torches, let's get our pitchforks, and let's bury him in a lead coffin where he can't get out.
Jay says, make Vandy Vandy again.
I mean, here's something that's crazy, Mike. So we'll do this thing where you look in the power rankings to try to project spreads. So Kentucky, they're a 20-point dog in Vegas, but the power rankings, Bill Connolly's, has Kentucky as a 17-point dog against Georgia. They're an 18-point dog at Vandy. Vandy is a tougher game than Georgia right now, according to the power rankings. What? What? And Vandy's one of those, too. Like, you just wonder, how can they keep getting away with this kind of deal? You know, like, when's it going to stop?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
That's a good way to put it.
When's this going to end?
But, hey, maybe that's a perfect spot for them, because they're – I mean, hell, nobody but – I don't even know if there are diehard Vanderbilt fans, but no one but those people are going to be picking them to win this game.
And what if they did? Like, all right, that's a conversation we need to have, Mike, because, like, what if we're all sitting around waiting for Cinderella to turn into a pumpkin, and they're just awesome? Like, we didn't mock him too much for the national championship thing, but what if they go to the playoff? Like, Vanderbilt, what if they're this year's Indiana? I mean, it sounds crazy, but is it?
Have they ever named a stadium after a player?
I know Iowa State's is, but that's kind of a special circumstance. But, like, you would have to, it would have to be Pavia Field at First Bank Stadium or something.
I was having this conversation with someone today that, you know, because Clark Lee, his name's going to start popping up on these hop boards, you know, Arkansas, Florida, Auburn, what have you. Hell, I if I were him, and he loves Vanderbilt, he's from here.
Mm-hmm.
His all his family's from here. He played there. He walked on there. if he has a long tenure and stays there, you know, 2 decades, it's probably going to be Clark Lee Stadium or Lee Stadium or whatever. Like that, that's something no one else can offer that guy.
Right, right. Which, and I know he's younger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like having to do the rebuild at Vanderbilt. There's, you got to play two sides of the coin. Do you strike while the iron's hot, or do you realize, holy crap, I know how hard it is to turn a program around. Do I really want to try to do that again? Now that I got this thing humming and I'm at my alma mater, we got this new stadium that we can sell out because it's not that big. And I mean, here's the other part you got to think about too, because yeah, you're in Nashville. You know, it's a very cosmopolitan area. College football is probably the main sport, but there's not, I'm sure Tennessee has the most fans there, but you know, there's a lot of people from Kentucky who moved to Nashville or Kentucky basketball fans. There's a lot of people from Bama or Bama football fans. Like it's a real hodgepodge. And yeah, if you've got a loose allegiance, going to a Vanderbilt football game on a Saturday has got to be a great time. So like, he could really build up something fun as Nashville's college football team there. Mm-hmm. So I would think that on the heels of all of this, if they get this thing revved up and they go to a playoff, that he's not going to be eager to get out in a hurry. If nothing else, it might be, you know, all right, we come down to earth a little bit. We don't have Pavia. And that too, I think, is something if you're a athletic director, you got to worry of like how much of this is Clark Lee versus Diego Pavia and Tim Beck. Because in all likelihood, Tim Beck's going to get a job at a G5 school next year. You know, so like that's in play there. So it's fascinating, all the various dynamics, but in the here and now, I don't think it's preposterous to be the one who says, you know what, maybe he just keeps his shit rolling and they just go right to the playoff. I mean, people will lose their freaking minds if Vanderbilt is in the playoff, right? SEC's getting Vandy in? Like, what the hell? What the hell's going on? I'm sure Danny Cannell would try to spin it as, well, the SEC stinks, and that's why Vanderbilt's been. You
know. Well, hey, there's one team we haven't hit on, Nick, and maybe when they play Vanderbilt, maybe it's a playoff eliminator type game.
Could be. Very well could be.
Mizzou, that's a team we haven't referenced. Could they win the league? Hell, they got the schedule for it. Beat Bama. Or A&M, you know, both of them at home. All the road games are winnable at Auburn, at Vanderbilt, at Oklahoma, at Arkansas. You know, go 10-2, they might very well make the conference championship. They got to be in conversation, wouldn't you think?
Oh, they definitely do. It just sucks how hard it is to get a good grip on who they are after the month of September. They beat a terrible South Carolina team, and they had to come back. It was a little bit closer than you probably like. They went in a shootout against Kansas. Though at least the thing about Missouri is you feel pretty good that they're going to be able to score points against whoever they play. But, like, can they win? Do they have to win every game in a shootout? I don't know. Like, that's why this is so hard for me. You'd like for them to have been able to tuck one of those G5 games later in the schedule, mm-hmm. right? Like, when they play your UMass in October or November. Because I kind of want to hop on the Missouri bandwagon with Shane. Is Shane still on that bandwagon, by the way? Is he's still banging that big-ass drum?
He's driving the train, trust me.
I'm a little hesitant to get on it because it's like I'm ready to see more. I'm ready to see more from you, Missouri, because, you know, I know that your most difficult games are at home, but Prabula versus Mateer later on in the season, that feels like a real playoff eliminator to me. So I'm not fully bought in, but they definitely got to be in the mix with the A&Ms of the world, the LSUs of the world, if they can ever figure out their offense, and Ole Miss. So I'm fired up. I know we also didn't mention the guys calling the Hogs down there. We've already got 5 Power Conference coaching openings, and it's not even October. And man, Bobby's done it again. Bobby 2.0. That guy, he knows how to weasel his way up the coaching.
What do you think? How attractive is that job? Do you think would it break your heart if John Summerall is the new Kentucky coach?
It's fascinating to me that Hunter Yurecek is seemingly talking about how bad of the job is publicly while hiring a new coach. Right, like he mentions that Pittman didn't have the financial resources for it. He said at that touchdown club that they can't win a national championship. Like that's an awfully bold strategy when you're trying to court a new coach. And I know that maybe some of it is expectation management for his fans, but you can't do this while you're trying to hire a guy. And they're in a weird spot where it's almost like it's Rhett Lashley or bust, where the money men want to see it happen. But you know who else has a lot of money? All them people at SMU. I know Lashley was an Arkansas guy, but it really feels like Lashley or bust, or they're screwed, because I think Summerall is going to, you know, wait for that Auburn job, right? Like as much as Kentucky fans are excited for him, he might just say, I don't want to deal with that headache, right? I'll go to a place where I can get the best players and win a title at Auburn. Lashley made the playoff at SMU. Can he make the playoff at Arkansas? Can he have as much money there to go get players? They're in a tough spot, or else they might end up with Bobby 2.0, which, hey, here's the thing about Bobby Petrino. We saw it at Louisville. He'll win you some games, but after 3 years, you need to be ready to move on, right? Like you cannot give him a long contract. He's going to burn hot. He's going to burn fast. He's probably going to get a really good quarterback. I mean, how funny would it be if he started ripping off wins and Taylen Green gets in the Heisman conversation, like Lamar Jackson? Because Taylen Green's awesome. He really is. But that defense, whew, yikes.
Bobby Petrino's, I know his appearance will not resemble anything like this, but he's like that the hot woman you meet at the bar right after a breakup. You know what? Like, could be good for a hot minute, but if you make a commitment, ooh, buddy, that says more about you than anything.
Yeah, like she's got a cracked screen on her phone and she's overly flirty, where you're like, this is too easy. I know that I shouldn't do it. And I got to be careful here, but for one night, maybe two, you can't get roped into it. You can't sit there and look up 6 months later and say, oh God, am I stuck with this?
You're bringing her over for Thanksgiving. You know, you got a problem.
Yeah. You cannot take her home for Thanksgiving.
You know who you can't take? Those Carolina Jackpot. He's got a special request for you, Roush. Could you please ask Dingling what it says for Kentucky if South Carolina is so terrible, yet beat their ass 4 years in a row and still has nothing but negative shit to say about us?
Yeah, you beat the worst football team in the SEC. Good job, buddy. And ultimately, Shane Beamer dominating Mark Stoops is going to be what spells out his demise. And that's got to agitate the hell out of him, because Shane Beamer is unequivocally the most hated coach in the coaching ranks in all of college football, because he is a child. After the game, when he's taking his victory lap, he's got to take a shot at a guy he used to coach with at Oklahoma. There was a coach who was asked about Beamer ball, and he said, I was not aware of that. It was his dad at Virginia Tech. All right, first and foremost, it's not exactly what he said. He was making kind of a joke, kind of a quip. Second of all, your special team sucked ass in that game. You kicked the ball out of bounds. You tried a fake punt. It didn't work. The T-bar penalty that they invented because of you, you committed that penalty in that game. Shanked a punt. I mean, it was bad. Second, and then thirdly, that interview that he talked about, Mike, that was only posted in one place on the internet. It was the KSR YouTube channel. It was 17 minutes into a 34-minute video. And he said it after 5 minutes of going on and on about how great they are at special teams. Beamer is such a, like, he needs external factors to motivate him so badly that he is going to go to great lengths, to the greatest lengths, to be petty and be a troll. And for that reason, he's just not going to last. He's not going to last. It's going to burn out. And Lenora Sellers might save him this year, but and if Sellers doesn't, he's going to run off to Virginia Tech and be their coach because that's where he's liked. He hates being hated so much that he's willing to sit through 30 minutes of KSR YouTube interviews to go and watch like 25 minutes of them talking nice about how great South Carolina is. He's going to run off there because they like him there. And if he doesn't run off there, he's going to be on TV. And that's the part that's going to annoy us all in the SEC. Because that guy, he looks like Seth Greenberg Part 2, where he was a pretty good coach for a while, and then he's going to be on TV for 20 years talking because he's great on TV and he'll play nice. But when it comes to actual coaching, he's so damn petty and he's so childish that he's burnt every bridge in that coaching community, and nobody's going to want to work with him.
Well, if nothing else, we learned that Beamer is a loyal subscriber to Kentucky Sports Radio YouTube, as everyone should be.
Yeah, I hope he subscribed to that SEC podcast, too, and I hope you heard that, Shane.
Oh, he came. He sat down with us, Cousin Shane, leading up to Kentucky. He said, Beamer, I'll make you a prediction here. Beamer's first coach fired. Beamer, thank you for your time, sir. We very much appreciate it. But he sat down, he said, first coach fired, huh? And I was like, yeah.
He doesn't forget, man. He's a child. He's more online than me and you, and we work online.
All right, Dick, as always, before you go, could you remind the cousins where to follow you and where to find your work?
Yeah. Be like Shane. Go subscribe to that KSR YouTube channel. I'm at Roush KSR, too, so and at Kentucky Sports Radio. Appreciate you all hanging out with me on my birthday. I'm going to cut some cake and wish for a Kentucky football win. And that wish probably ain't going to come true.
Yeah, keep on wishing. Let us know what happens. You know,
we need a lot more wishes.
All right. Appreciate each and every one of you. Oh, Thorne, real quick. He got one. I'm probably the biggest Stoops apologist, but to be honest, I'm at the point where I can't come up with any more. I'd longer be sad if he did leave after this year. Is that pretty much where the fan base is, Nick?
Yeah. And, like, the worst part is they've gone from mad to indifferent in a lot of cases. And that's – apathy is worse than anger. Much, much worse. So it's going to get ugly. They played three potential playoff teams in the next 4 weeks. And, whew, there's no end in sight. There's no end in sight. So maybe if it gets bad enough, Stoops starts looking around and saying, maybe I don't need all this money. But it's looking pretty bad right now.
Well, hate to be a Debbie Downer, but that's the perfect place to end on this one. Hopefully Stoops is there next week. We can talk all about it. Until then, thank you, Nick. We'll catch you next week, buddy.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.